homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. When Reverend Master Jihu, Peggy Kennett, went to Japan, they asked her why she had come. Had she come to learn flower arranging, the tea ceremony, calligraphy? Because they said, many Westerners came to Japan to learn these things. And I would say, too, that many Westerners went to Japan in those days to perfect their meditation, all sorts of different ways. And when Reverend Master said that she wanted the perfection of Zen, then they taught her in a way that they did not generally teach other Westerners. One of the aspects of this was the teaching regarding the experience of liberation and of realization. What that actually means, what it pertains to, and how to go about it. When I first came to Shasta Abbey in 1976, all I was hoping for was to have proximity to the Dharma. I had read a lot about the life of the Buddha and the life of his disciples. And I was hoping for a little benefit gained from proximity. When Reverend Master Jihu first spoke in a public talk at the monastery, I realized that I had encountered a place, a person, who actually would teach me about the actual realization of the Dharma. And that was not something that I had ever hoped was a possibility. Those of you who are listening to me who were present in the very early days know that it was like a great flood, like a dam bursting. A great concourse of water flowing out. As a result of Reverend Master first beginning to teach people, as a result also of the Kensho in 76, throughout the years here, that great flood, that great dam bursting, has flowed on. More like a river for a period of time. And then eventually the river enters the ocean. And there is the calm and still depths In the beginning, when Reverend Master first started this place, there was, out of necessity, an enormous amount of drama. People came face to face with their koans. People had direct experience of previous existences and of kensho. And it was all so completely new and revolutionary. The water flowed out and filled the valley. To great depth. But with far less foaming on the surface. And a greater capacity to endure difficulty. Before I spoke about training with precepts and meditation and the lessening of selfishness, through training, our coarser aspects of our selfishness are lessened. We learn to have compassion for others and to empathize with them. We learn through doing what needs to be done and what we are asked to do in the monastery. We learn the secret of letting go. Through this, we learn how the Dharma works, and we began to see changes in ourselves and in others. This causes us to have confidence in the practice and the path. We begin to understand what the essentials are in practice. And do not become so upset and wrapped up in the externals. As the coarser aspects of our selfishness are transformed, and we have confidence in the ability of the practice to help us, and we begin to understand what the essentials of practice actually are, then we can enter the stream. The metaphor of the great ocean, the metaphor of the flowing rivers, the metaphor of the water of the spirit, are more than simply symbols. Entering the stream is very much like entering a stream. And we can experience the flowing of the water of the Spirit. Many people have some sort of spiritual experience and want somebody to tell them that it is right. We actually do not, by our rules, tell a layperson directly that what they are experiencing is the important thing. This is because the training at that time involves the letting go of the coarser aspects of selfishness. And it is not good to encourage somebody in that particular point of training. It is not good to encourage them to think of spiritual practice in terms of attaining or achieving something personal. Some people, at the point of the entering of the stream, find it very difficult to go any further. One thing not really understood in the West is that the experience of entering the stream, the experience of body and mind dropping off, what is sometimes called Kensho or Satori, are not the arrival at Buddhahood. We sometimes call them becoming Buddha because there is actually no difference in the awakening, except, I suppose, depth or shallowness. As we go on from entering the stream, there arises sometimes the intensification of greed in the form of desire and hatred in the form of irritation. It is often at this point that desire arises very strongly in a person's training. This is why some people who seem to go quite afar spiritually then make very crude mistakes. It is not because they have not achieved anything on the path, neither is it because the path does not work, the path and training do not work, but that when we begin to face some of these things, they become very, very strong because we look at them. And there are many, many possibilities of slip-ups as we go along. Although the coarser aspects of selfishness have been dissolved, as it were, there are the subtler aspects of selfishness. And indeed, things like conceit or arrogance, distraction, and delusion, and comparing oneself to others, are among the very last things to be overcome. It is said that someone entering the stream has a maximum of 7 more human lifetimes. And a lot can go astray in those lifetimes. And people can make heavy and serious mistakes. Because there is a lot more to be trained with. Of course, we do not simply train with some things without training with others. That is, we do not simply go at the coarser aspects of self and doubt in the practice without also trying to train our arrogance, our conceit, our distracted mind, our comparing oneself to others, etc., our greed and our hatred. The mistake that somebody can make when the desire and hatred lessen, it is why Reverend Master Jiu called the second Kensho the ongoing, because it's an ongoing process of training greed and hatred. And that takes a while, well, 7 lives. Mistakes can be made. And one mistake that is often made is because these things become less, people can think that they are gone. They can think that they are free from desire and free from hatred and irritation, when in fact it is simply that they have been mitigated. And there is the possibility of deceiving oneself when they do arise and thinking that this cannot be desire because I must be free from desire. Or I am not actually experiencing irritation. And thus, great mistakes can be made. And depending how great the mistakes, it ends up in the news. This does not mean, as I say, that the path is invalid. It does not mean that the people were not sincere. But it can mean that they have deluded themselves. This is particularly so for people who are training, who then refuse to take advice of the Sangha or of teachers because they think they know it all. This increases the possibility of huge mistakes. the creating of a lot of karma that then has to be cleaned up. But as I say, when this occurs, we should not despair of the practice. We should just rectify it. A monk once asked the great master Joshu, "What is the most important thing for the one who sits in the teacher's seat?" And Joshu replied, "Not to deceive oneself." People can deceive oneself without sit with themselves, without sitting in the teacher's seat. Because of what she was taught, because she was taught very well in Japan, even though they did not, how do I put it, they did not varnish or sugarcoat things for her, as often they did for Westerners. They presented only the nice side of things. Reverend Master Ji used to say there are two ways of teaching. One is that the disciples only see the teacher when the teacher is sitting on the Dharma seat, giving Dharma talks. And when they don't see the teacher, they are training, you know, in the monastery in some sort of way, which is fine. She said the other method of teaching is to let the disciple see you, to let the disciple see your faults, see how you train and how you deal with them. And that was the method she was trained with. Koho Zenji used to go down in the morning and go to the toilet, the latrine, all in a row with the other monks. And when his head had to be shaved, he had it shaved by the most junior postulant. Reverend Master Jiu trained out loud. Like she would complain about something and then she would say, "End of grouse." She let us see how she went about training. This has its perils, because if you show disciples how you go about training, they can become obsessed with the teacher's faults and lose faith. On the other hand, to train with a teacher with that particular method can be of enormous benefit. Dogen has an entire chapter devoted to the master and disciple relationship by comparing it with Wisteria, which here we have out over one of the cloisters. wisteria climbs by each of the branches relying upon the other. As Reverend Master would say, two people seeking the key of life together. This practice of the Buddha's way is not a game. It is quite real, and we have to do the training. It says in the scripture, if we do these things, this training for some time, we will become as herein described. And the other scripture says that if we pursue this training, which seems all dull and foolish to the worldly mind, then we will come to know the results of training intimately. There is a verse that says, the light of the Lord, the Buddha, is everywhere. The palace of the Buddha nature is found within. They, the two things, wish to go quickly so their happy reunion may be soon. There are the results of training. There is the letting go of greed, hate, and delusion. There is the experience of peace and joy. But you have to do the training that will make them real for you. There is the release from suffering. There is the depth of the ocean. But we have to do the meditation and training. Homage to all the Buddhas in all worlds. Homage to all the Bodhisattvas in all worlds. Homage to the scripture of great wisdom.